You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey gang, what's going on? Kevin Goatee, Gutting the Sacred Cow. Here we are. We've brought back again Bill Schultz from The Morning Show on Compound Media, Morning with Bill and Joanne every day, Monday through Thursday. But we flipped the script. How do we do that? We have Bill sitting in the co-host chair. Good God, King, this is going to be a slobber knocker. Why? Because Kevin Israel is going to gut the sacred cow. That's right, we're flipping roles, flipping the script. Kevin Israel is going to come gut the shining. Before we get to it, few things, of course. GuttingTheSacredCow.com, every day, new articles. Find the links, where to find us, all that good stuff. My podcast links, YouTube links, merch store. Grab a shirt, grab a hat, grab a tote bag. GuttingTheSacredCow@gmail.com. If you want to advertise with us, we've got a brand new advertiser today. You're going to hear all about how do they reach us. GuttingTheSacredCow@gmail.com. Keep the 5-star ratings and 2-sentence reviews coming in. Thank you so very much. We always share those on social media. Also, speaking of social media, GTSC Podcast on Facebook. Sorry, on Twitter, on Facebook and Instagram, it's Gutting the Sacred Cow. And if you wear some of our merch, take a picture of yourself, send it to us, and we'll gladly put you on social media. Without further ado, here is Kevin Israel, Gutting the Sacred Cow.
Gather round, here's what I know. It's just that this cow has got to go. Some people kinda like it, yeah, it's trending right now.
Yeah,
that doesn't matter, cause we're gutting the sacred cow.
Yeah, you know, Jack Burton always says at a time like this. Who? Jack Burton. Me. Old Jack always says, what the hell? Kevin Israel, another finger roll because... You know, finger roll layup for you. Go ahead.
I'm not the co-host. You have to throw that once you're
co-host. Oh, that's right. Welcome.
He's big trouble. I'm little China.
Kevin Goatee here. Kevin Israel, gutting the sacred cow. That voice, that nasally voice that you heard the third time. Bill Schultz from Morning with Bill and Joanne. Bill, how are you today?
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I was very much looking forward to this. I apologize that I'm ruining your NBA action right now.
Oh, you're not ruining my NBA action. Yeah. That you might as well put that on the Christian channel for me and Kevin. That's but today, though, we have a special twist. So at the beginning, I gave a quote of the film. Does my co-host for this episode want to announce what film that is from?
Well, wait, the quote you just did was from Big Trouble in Little China.
Well, that means that Bill has answered as co-host because we are switching roles today. We're doing a heel turn like no other. This is like Stone Cold shaking Vince McMahon's hand. We are switching the tables. We are going to try this a couple of times. Kevin Israel is not going to be co-host for today. I invited one of our favorite guests, as we all know, Bill Schultz from The Morning Show on Compound Media every day, Monday through Thursday, 10 to 11 a.m., to come on and be a co-host of me. But Kevin Israel has picked a film to gut. Kevin Israel, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, I am so juiced up. I am ready to go.
You're like the opposite of Kubrick.
So
entertaining.
Zing. Funny. This is our second Kubrick film we're doing on this podcast. 2001: A Space Odyssey by J.L. Colvin was done, and ironically, also Kevin Israel made it as worst film ever seen. But yes. Today, wow. But today, Kevin Israel sits in the guest chair, and he has chosen to take down the classic 1980s The Shining. Jack Nicholson. I mean, wow, this is one for the ages. A 19
bigger go home.
Hence why he's wearing his castle, his Punisher tank top. A 1980 budget of $15 million, which brought in at the time a haul of $46.2 million. Now translating to 2020 money, $47.1 million budget. A $145.2 million haul.
That works.
3x plus ROI, not bad numbers. IMDb, Bill Schultz, as you know, is a scale through 1 through 10 with decimal points. What did The Shining get on IMDb?
I would say blue. Is that the correct one? Is color an option? What was it?
I'm asking for a guess, Numbnuts. You've been on the show before. Well, 1 through 10, what's the number that IMDb has?
I'm going to say 10.
You're going to think I got a perfect 10? Ballsy move. Kevin Israel, what did The Shining get?
8.6.
8.4.
Ah.
No one. What gets a 10? I know for a fact Toy Story has a perfect Rotten Tomato score both sides.
Kev, you're going to be happy about this.
Why?
Perfect 10s for 10s on IMDb. Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Okay.
American Beauty.
I like it, but it's not a 10. I like it, but it's not a 10.
Green Mile, more like the Brown Mile.
Shawshank Redemption.
I completely agree.
Sure, of course.
Forrest Gump.
No.
The Godfather.
I completely agree.
The Big Lebowski.
Absolutely. Nope. Viciously
wonderful.
Disagree.
That's great.
Awful, 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 awful.
Awful. Hate America.
Awful.
And Green Book.
Not a 10. It's good, but it's not a 10. Toy Story is an abysmal 8.3. That is a fucking crime against humanity. I will see you on trial at The Hague, you communist fucks.
Well, I like Toy Story, but now
I love Toy Story.
You don't like The Big Lebowski.
So I hate The Big Lebowski.
It's a shitty movie.
It is a shitty movie times five. We did it on this podcast. Ron Barber did an admirable job of taking that down.
Oh, God.
Critics, Rotten Tomatoes score is a 1 through 100 percentage score. Kevin Israel, we start with you now. Critics score, The Shining, what did it get?
88.
Bill Schultz?
I will go lower and say 70.
84. Critics score.
God damn it, he's already ahead.
Audience.
Get used to it.
Audience, Rotten Tomatoes score. Bill Schultz, you go first this time.
Oh, boy. 75.
Wow. Kevin Israel.
93.
93 on the nose!
I thought there were a lot of That's dumb people like Israel, and that they wouldn't like it.
They love this. People love this fucking film. I'm a little surprised on the critics who haven't had it lower than 90.
Yeah, actually, so am I.
I am too.
But 93 for the audience is right smack in the middle.
Critics suck.
So this is how it's going to work today, guys, before we move on to the quotes. Bill is going to sit, like I said, with me on co-host, and it's kind of we're kind of figuring out where he's going to go, but maybe Kevin Israel's argument will lean toward that. But Bill will be deciding if Kevin has got the sacred cow along with myself as opposed to his usual role in the guest chair. So here we go. Quotes. I mean, you have your obvious two. I'll say them just for the fucking sake of. Here's Johnny and Red Rum. The third one I didn't remember because I saw this, I don't know how long ago, again, until the other night. I'm not going to hurt you. I just want to smash your brains in. That jumped out at me. Good one. Good one.
Both are not in the book. Here's Johnny was an improv via one Jack Nicholson.
Yep.
And the smash your brains one was like a last minute script revise that I think Kubrick or his assistant did. I forget her name. Because fucking women, you know? But, yeah, she assisted him on the whole thing. But, yeah, he was writing. like up until the end of the movie, he was changing everything.
Yeah, it shows.
I just gave you a layup, god damn it.
You were like his fucking, Yari Curry to Wayne Gretzky, 85 Edmonton Oilers, Luke Robitaille to Gretzky, Mark Messier.
I'm getting you new hockey references.
I will, as a Rangers fan. As a Rangers fan, we had most of those guys on our team in the early to mid-90s, excuse me. Bill, any other quotes jump out at you from this film?
You've always been here. You've always been the caretaker. Anything that
is that really that quotable? That line is it really?
No, because I didn't know I was doing quotes. I thought you were going to do all that, and I'd comment. Let me think. Come play with us, Danny. I mean, that always like sticks with you as far as those creepy twins that weren't supposed to be twins is concerned. Anything? Well, and also I know that Shelley Duvall had a shitload. Oh, I forget. We're not supposed to swear.
You can. It's okay. It's
we
fine.
Can.
Hold on. I want quotes. I don't want fucking backstory and all that shit yet. You think he's never done this show before, Israel? My God.
I know, the difference between you and Joanne is stark and horrifying.
She's my Shelley Duvall, sharp and focused.
You forgot the word concise.
Yeah, she doesn't know what that means. Too many syllables.
Agenda based.
Yeah.
Quotes. I want quotes. This Kevin Israel. I immediately regret this decision.
Let's see. First of all, how dare you besmirch your co-host?
You miss me, don't you, Ken?
Oh.
God, you got me this.
All right, Kevin Israel. All right. Any quotes from you? Ahead. Nothing else.
Yeah, I got one.
All right.
Here.
Just a little problem with the old sperm bank upstairs.
Good one.
Not bad.
I'm going to be saying that for the next month.
Is Ashley in the house? Is that how you're going to fit her? Over, under, number of shitty Nicholson references in this episode, I put it at 4.5. Over, under. Put the over at minus 150.
I won't impersonate him, I promise.
I didn't say I wasn't.
Yeah, I know you will.
Five fun facts.
Five fun facts. Whoa, five fun facts. Five fun facts. Five fun facts. Five fun facts.
The snow in the maze was not snow. It was 900 tons of salt and crushed styrofoam.
Wow. That's right? Where the budget
That's
went.
A lot of styrofoam.
Yeah.
To properly set his mood, Nicholson ate only cheese sandwiches for 2 weeks prior to filming because he hates cheese sandwiches.
And apparently he hates shitting. Jesus.
I was just going to say, why did you want to be constipated?
Yeah. No kidding. Ugh.
I haven't taken good shit in 4 weeks.
We're ready at two.
Only two and a half more.
The under people are shitting their pants. The elevator scene was done in how many takes do you think it took to get the elevator scene, the blood scene in the elevators? How many takes do you think it got to get right?
Well, I think the most takes were 168, so I'm going to go 120.
Israel?
I'm gonna do the old prices right and say they did it in one.
Three. But it took a year to plan it out. Yeah. How long did the Here's Johnny scene take to do, and how many doors did they go through while doing the scene? So I want days it took to do the scene, and I want number of doors.
3 days, 10 doors.
7 days, 12 doors.
Second. 3 days.
I want to go to the second.
3 days is right for Bill Schultz.
Yes.
60 doors.
60?
60. Oh.
I would love to see that footage of him just constantly.
Can you get the goddamn take already? The scene where Wendy swung the bat at Jack Nicholson is in the Guinness Book of World Records. How many takes with spoken dialogue? So the most takes for a scene with spoken dialogue. How many takes to get that right?
I thought that the most takes were with Scatman Crothers, his Christian name, with Danny, and that was 168. So I guess this one beat it. So I don't know, man.
Like, I did not see that in my five facts, but okay.
168 was that. So all right, so that means it's lower. I'm gonna go
150.
Israel. And you have a bad fact.
185.
Maybe at the time it had this. 127 it took them to get that seat right.
I was closer.
That crew must have been so angry.
Oh, no. God, yeah. No. You know why? Because
they're getting paid by the hour. Overtime.
No. Golden time. They were making like, come on. So what's happened? I just tripped over a cord again. Oops. There go.
Yeah.
It was like that scene in Airplane where Johnny pulls out the lights and all the lights go off on the runway. Like, oh, sorry.
It's like a big Tylenol with wings.
Oh, God, what a fucking classic. But listen, enough
of our Israel hates that one, too.
But
oh, I love Airplane. Thank you.
Enough general tomfoolery, chicanery, general horseplay, shenanigans. Hey, gang, what's going on? Before we get into Kevin Israel gutting the sacred cow, we've got a new sponsor, and that's MyBookie. Winning season returns at MyBookie. It also means doubling your first deposit. It also means Survivor, Super Contest, and Squares. Winning season means winning all your parlays and your props with your feet up with a cocktail and watching your team trounce the rivals. It's NFL season in just a few short weeks. You know that's my time to shine. So here we are. Invest in your intuition. Use promo code SACREDCOW and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play, designed to add more excitement to the game you love and the games you bet. From live betting to championship futures, every play you want to make is waiting at MyBookie. It's simple. Make your bets. Win big. Collect free money. What's better than free money? Again, promo code SACREDCOW and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today, only at MyBookie. And now, Kevin Israel guts the sacred cow, or at least tries to. I can't believe I'm going to say this. Bill, you know the words. It's now time for my former co-host, Kevin Israel, to gut the sacred cow.
This is going to be good. I'm not, you know what? I'm here to attack the disease, not the patient.
Your job is to shut the fuck up and listen to his case.
Yeah, you know what? Can you turn his mic off? Is that an option?
I can actually.
All right, first of all, some backstory. I never saw The Shining until last year. I was always a big Stephen King fan, read a lot of his books, just never got around to see The Shining. I think I always had in the back of my head that it was going to be overrated, and I just never saw it. And then I decided when they announced that Dr. Sleep was coming out, that I was going to read both books and see both movies. So I set out, and I regret it. I wish I watched the movie first, because I'm going to try very, very hard not to make this a book is better than the movie review.
Even though, because I do that all the time.
Yeah, it's easy to slip into.
I know.
But I will say with the caveat that Kubrick was working with a very, very well-formatted plot and source material, that remaking that book should have been really, really easy for him. That's my caveat. So I read the book, saw the movie, and I was stunned at how much I hated the movie. And I think when Goatee and I started doing this, I think I might have seen it right before we started doing the podcast. And I said to him that at some point I want to gut this fucking movie. And I finally found a way to weasel my way into doing it. And I'm very excited. So I broke my analysis into two sections. I have general thoughts. And
oh my God, typically, this is a lawyer in him.
Yeah. Oh, typically, no. In fairness, typically KG is the one who takes down all his specific notes and makes all his jokes. And I do a much more broad overlook of the movies. It works out very well. But in this instance, I had to be as specific as possible. And then I'm going to go into my overall problems with the plot and with the cast. So just starting from the beginning of the movie, the slow dragging shot of the car driving through the forest is so overdone and boring with the music playing. We get it. It's a horror movie. We knew we were seeing a horror movie. You don't have to beat us over the fucking face with it. You know what would have been better? Why didn't you just have 2 minutes of black screen that we could have stared at? Oh, no, sorry. Some asshole already did that.
All back.
And here's the other thing. That music suggests that Jack is already bad. that something bad is already happening. And this is going to be my first breaking of my rule to the book, where in the beginning of the book, Jack is a likable guy. Jack is not crazy. Jack is a little damaged, and you don't know exactly what's going to happen with Jack. I mean, I did because I knew the basic gist of the story. And it was a slow evolution into crazy Jack Torrance. So at that point, I think if they wanted to do the movie right, the music should have been light and happy because they were starting this new adventure. But instead, they had to beat you in the face with the fact that you're seeing a horror movie, which we already knew. And then Kubrick, because we're all such fucking idiots, he has to show the audience a name of the chapter for every scene. He names every section of the... He makes it into a book, and yet he decided to completely ignore the book source material. So fuck you, Kubrick. I love watching older movies that aren't that old, because when the manager says, "Susie, can you get us some coffee?" You can't do that anymore. Like, you can't... That can't happen anymore.
And it's right just here, so, right here.
It's just so refreshing to see that, like, oh, I remember those days.
The only thing missing was a pat on her ass as she walked to fetch the coffee.
Right, girl? Be good.
Run along, honey. To quote Bond and Goldfinger, run along, honey, man talk.
The minute they introduce Danny Torrance, I know finding child actors is tough. And I know it's rigorous work and it's grueling, and you're not going to find a kid who's always a fucking Oscar actor. They found the worst possible kid to play him. This kid, as we were talking about before with your co-host, Bill, Joanne, this kid has the deadest eyes I've ever seen. His expression doesn't change throughout the whole fucking movie. You don't know if he's scared, upset, terrified, mad, angry, on fucking Oxycontin. It's all the same to this kid. Whether or not he's playing with his mom or getting chased by a saggy-titted ghost, he looks the same. And speaking of people who look the same, Jack Nicholson, didn't he win an Oscar for this? Did he win something for this?
No. But, I don't think so, but I'll...
Well, good, because he's crazy from the start to the finish. He's just as crazy, and nobody on set said, "Jack, that fucking thing with your eyebrows, relax. You're scaring everybody, and the movie just started." I feel like Jack Black looked at Jack Nicholson in this movie and was like, "That's what I want to look like. That's what I'm going with for the rest of my career." And then the manager sits down with Jack and starts to explain the history of the Overlook Hotel. And he's basically telling Jack, by the way, you're in a horror movie, in case you didn't know this job. It's in a horror movie. You're going to die. Your kids, somebody's going to die. If you've ever seen a horror movie, this is a horror movie. Like, it's so, this movie beats you in the face with foreshadowing. I don't even think it's it's like seven shadowing. It's so fucking painful.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. I pull up the award section. Nicholson did not win, but.
Oh, he was nominated. I didn't even know that.
But do you know who did win Razzie Awards?
Kelly Duvall.
Sorry. Nominated. Razzie Awards. Worst Actress?
Kelly Duvall.
And Worst Director.
Really? Oh my God.
Just saying. Continue, please. Sorry.
So then the manager tells Jack that, by the way, the last guy who had this job killed his whole family. And Jack's like, "Yeah, that's all right. We're going to take it." This is exactly what Eddie Murphy was talking about in his act when he said white people walk into a house and look around and they hear, "Get out." And they're like, "No, we think we're going to stay around and look around." If that was a black family, it would have been like, "You know what? We're going to go find some other fucking job. I think I can work this out." Is that blood coming out of the elevator, or did the Kool-Aid guy explode? That doesn't even kind of look like blood. It was like somebody said, "Yeah, blood is red," and that was all they knew about blood.
I thought it was a Kool-Aid man.
Danny, and so this is another thing that really bothered me. Tony was a huge part of the book. He's the shining, Danny's ability, the existence of Tony, Tony's part that he plays, the influence he has in the book, in the story, and then how everything proceeds is huge. And in this fucking movie, Tony is turned to a goddamn finger with a creepy voice that every parent would have sent their kid to a psychologist for and been like, It's not an imaginary friend. And he's the boy who lives in my mouth? That's hard. That's something a fucking priest says. That's terrifying.
Dang. Why do you write? How do we write jokes for any other episodes, you son of a bitch? I'm doing all the heavy lifting.
And then when she's talking to the doctor, and he asks how did he dislocate his arm, she's like, well, my husband, you know, he's a drunk, violent, abusive asshole. But hey, things are much better now. And the doctor's like, oh, okay, good luck. Yeah, that Dyfus must have not existed in this fucking state.
Funny, I think Bill Schultz is gonna have the same conversation in 10 years when he has kids and a wife.
Abort, abort, abort. That's my only type of parenting.
Yeah, and so then in the car they're talking about what happened to the settlers, and he's like, well, you know, they were cannibals, they ate themselves. And the kid's like, oh, no, I know all about this. The kid should have stopped and been like, hey, Dad, could you stop the car? I think we're in a horror movie. This whole exchange seems like we're all probably going to die. And then when they're in the hotel and she stops and goes, are these Indian designs authentic? Nope, you couldn't say that today. It would have been, are these Washington football team designs authentic?
Did you see when he picked up the magazine? There's a bonus fun fact. When he's waiting.
Playgirl.
You're right.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
That's amazing. the whole scene with the twins and Danny just with that same droopy, dumb-eyed face staring at the twins. I feel like that's when the kid's twin fetish kicked off. He's like, I don't know. I can't get my nut off unless there's two of you. It's something happened when I was a kid. It's a long story.
While wearing overalls on a big wheel.
Yeah. And that's a great point. I'll skip to that. The only thing this movie did do for me, the only positive impact it did, is it made me want to have a big wheel again.
Oh,
riding around that fucking hotel.
I agree
like
with that.
It's on my first fucking list of fucking. I said there's nothing that made me more jealous than seeing a kid tear ass around in a hotel on a big wheel. I go, oh my god, how cool that fucking.
I would have set up jumps and shit. That would have been
skidding, like doing skidding around.
Yeah, would,
did you guys have a little crane that could skid the big wheel?
Yes, okay. Yes.
Oh yeah,
doing like. Yeah. Dude, the e-brake for like a fucking car on a big wheel, that was dope. Oh,
yes.
So cool.
I had the Dukes of Hazzard big wheel, and it had a Confederate flag all over it. And I was in the Midwest.
Of course it did, because you're a racist.
And then Bill didn't have a horn. He yelled the N-word out as he came through the hall.
That was out the way! Via you and me, via email, not for live consumption.
I guess I'm Luke Duke and you're Beau Duke.
I'm a brunette.
And then they tell them that, yo, yeah, this was built on an Indian burial ground. Have none of these people ever even seen a horror movie before? Right. That's like the first, that's the main trope. And by the way, that also was not in the book. It was not built on an Indian burial ground. Stephen King's better than that.
No, he is not. Have you seen Pet Cemetery? Are you fucking kidding me?
Oh, come on.
Oh, that is
Pet Cemetery was it was a cemetery. Of course it was. That was the
point. It was based on an Indian burial ground, and that's how all this stuff happened. Stephen King has used that at least three times.
I would like those three times. I would like those three times. You can email them to me when you email me your apology for your stance on this movie.
Accept your apology when I give it. Pet Cemetery is one of them, so that's one.
I like when they meet Dick Halloran, and then they're like, "Hey, Dick, can you show Mrs. Torrance the kitchen? Because that's where women belong, in the kitchen."
And then she should have looked at Danny Torrance and go, "Can I answer?"
So I was expecting the scene from the book, and this kind of fucked me up because in the book Halloran takes Danny into his car and tells him, has that whole conversation about The Shining. And when I was reading that, I was like, that's really weird. Like, you would just let your kid go into a car. But even this scene was like, hey, you mind if I give him some ice cream? It's like, have you not seen any after school special? Not a single one? Sorry, Kev, I got them all.
It's in the eye, I'm sure you do.
The hedge maze. The minute they showed me that hedge maze, I would have been like, listen, nobody's going in that, ever. That's a recipe for death. If the Indian burial ground didn't tell me, and if the previous owner, employee of this place who killed his family didn't tell me, that fucking hedge maze is a disaster. Stay away from it. The two twins looked like those kids from the kid from Debbie's Cup. Was it Debbie's Cupcake? Debbie's,
yeah, Little Debbie's.
Little Debbie, yeah. The scene where he says, and this is just Kubrick fucking telegraphing again. Where he says, "Mom, can I go get my fire engine?" And she's like, "Well, you don't want to wake up your dad." It's like, first of all, let's cut through this. You're clearly going to let the kid go get this fire engine, and he's clearly going to wake up his dad, and something horrible is going to happen. That I saw that coming before he even asked for his fucking fire engine. Kubrick is as subtle as a fucking charging elephant with a heart on. Like,
says the Stephen King fan.
Yeah, but at least Kubrick was trying to make this like subtle fucking psychological movie that this book wasn't at all. Oh my God, Bill, I'm gonna beat the shit out of you.
You're already wrong.
Jack hugging the kid. That when he goes in and he gets to get his fire engine, and then he's like, "Just come here," and he starts hugging him. It's the most awkward hug. It made me so grateful that my father never hugged me. is that what a dad's hug is like? Ugh. And then he just keeps going, and then the kid keeps going, "No, Dad. Yes, Dad. No, Dad. Get the kid some uppers. Give him some cocaine or something. This kid hasn't felt something since he was fucking born. Jesus." And then Jack has the nightmare that I dreamt I'm going to kill you. Well, guess what? I'm probably going to kill you. Like, she should have left right then. Like, right at that moment, she should have been like, "All right, we'll go risk the snow, because this is clearly the way this is going to happen." I will say this, as much as I dislike this movie, I love the bar scene. I love the bar scene. I love everything that happens. And that is all close to the book. And that's why I like that all so much. Yeah. It had a very rich, very eerie feeling about it. This whole idea of this guy walking into the room where there was supposed to be nobody, and now there's this fucking one bartender. And then there, when he walks in again and there's a party going on, I thought that was fantastic. But it was also all the stuff I liked from this movie was the stuff that was actually true to the book. Everything else, which was 80% of the movie, is a fucking shit show. And then Wendy goes from being an annoying, whiny pain in the ass to a sniveling, slobbering mess in one scene. She spends the first half of the movie whining and being annoying. Then she spends the second half crying and screaming. Women's rights advocates must watch this and go, "Well, let's not show this at our next convention, because it's probably not going to go too well." And then the scene, and it's funny, Bill quoted it, but it the scene in the bathroom where he confronts Grady, and Grady says, "You've always been the caretaker, and I've always been here." Like, I get that that's a creepy thing to say, but it absolutely makes no sense. It didn't mean, like, you were bound to be here. Like, you were drawn to this place. But again, and what Kubrick misses and the book hits on over and over again is that Jack also had a little bit of The Shining. And that's why the hotel was able to get his claws in him. But then it realized that the kid had so much more, and they wanted the kid and not Jack. And it was going to use Jack to get to the kid. And all of that, had they worked some of that into this fucking story, it would have made sense. But instead they didn't, and they just turned it into this just kind of average horror movie where everybody's motivation is nonsensical and not explained. And then when the scene with Grady where he just drops the N-bomb out of nowhere, like the movie's just chugging along and suddenly he's just like, "Yeah, there's an N-word coming." It's like, wow, we didn't need that at all. Like, there was no need for that.
That caught me by surprise big time. I go, oh.
Well, you told me you jerked off to it. Is that code for caught me by surprise? You fucking monster.
And he would have finished if he said kite. And then when, oh, by the way, Dick Halloran's choice in art is amazing.
Oh, nude.
He is the man.
Bush afro.
I loved it. Just big fat boobs. Like, it was, I don't know what point that served. I don't know if it's supposed to be symbolic of something,
I think Scatman Crothers goes, look, I'm only getting paid scale for this, but I'm going to make some artistic shit right now.
And by the way, on his rider. Yeah.
No, I think that was Scatman Crothers' bedroom.
Yeah, it was his payment.
Like, just film it here. Give me a couple extra bucks.
By the way, wait till we get to the Amazon one-star reviews. One reader definitely makes note of that.
Oh, probably got it on Amazon.
Yeah.
So one thing I did learn from the movie, that there was a Roadrunner theme song to the cartoon.
Thank you. Stop. I had no idea, and I've seen every.
I didn't know that either.
But yeah. Here's the thing. My wife was watching with me, and she starts singing along. I go, wait a minute. I have Looney Tunes box sets on DVD, for Christ's sakes. I've never, ever heard of a Roadrunner theme song.
And we were in the age range for that.
I know that. That like, blew my mind.
I was 5 when that came out. I would have remembered that. But
yeah, I feel like that, what is it called? The Mandela Effect, where everybody remembers something, but it's actually not true. Yeah. I feel like they just made that song up, and now everybody's walking around going, oh, yeah, there's a Roadrunner theme song.
But my wife starts singing along.
Oh, like, she remembered it, though?
She sang along.
Oh, that's crazy.
Beat for beat. I go, what the fuck? She goes, I thought you were a Looney Tunes guy. I go, I've never ever heard this before in my life. Blew my mind, but good point. Excellent.
So it did exist. Huh.
Shelley Duvall wore a corduroy overall dress, and I appreciate that because nobody ever wore one again. another piece that I will admit was creepy was the all work and no play, finding just pages and pages of that. That wasn't in the book either. And I thought that was a really, really nice touch. And it's creepy to think that he was just sitting down there that whole time. And I was even watching him type, trying to figure out, is that the right amount of keystrokes to type that out? Because I'm a fucking maniac.
It wasn't, by the way.
No, you're right. It wasn't. But I like that. And I do think that if there ever was a book printed with just all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy all over it, it would sell huge at Urban Outfitters.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Like, the hipsters would be like, I got the first edition of this book. And
this is the best coffee table book ever.
Leather
bound. I'm going to get laid.
Leather bound, $150. Bingo.
Yeah.
Bestseller.
Getting hit on the head with a bat and rolling down the stairs, you should be dead, which just shows the shitty way she was holding the bat. I don't know who taught her to hold a bat. I don't know if she just never saw a baseball game. I'm a terrible athlete, and I know how to hold a bat. She couldn't even come up with – she was choking halfway up on it, and she thought that was going to do something.
It was a swinging bunt is what it was.
That's how Triple H hits people with the fucking sledgehammer so he doesn't hurt them. It was pathetic. The red rum scene also I thought was strange because, again, it was Tony –
Because it was awesome?
No, because Tony took over. Yeah, no, I'll give a credit. It was an eerie scene. It just didn't work with anything because Tony is actually supposed to be good. Tony's supposed to be helping the kid, and he's supposed to be trying to help them survive. And Tony's supposed to be like his secret support. And then he gets the knife and he writes the thing on murder. And I guess that it was supposed to be a message like bad shit's happening, but it comes across creepy. And the Tony from the book would have been much more artful about that than this fucking stupid finger thing that I thought was just batshit awful.
It was great.
Obviously, Here's Johnny was amazing. It's a great scene. It's an iconic scene. And of course it's great because Jack improvised it and had nothing to do with Kubrick.
Oh.
Slashing the hand, when she slashed the hand with the knife, and that it looked like it just left a little red magic marker piece of blood. And then he's like, there was nobody on set who'd ever seen blood before. Like, nobody had even tried to see blood. Okay. Give a little effort at it. Fucking some ketchup packets. And this was my last major problem with the movie itself. And it's a big one. Dick Halloran is a huge, huge character in the books. He has a huge part to play.
He saves him in the end.
Yeah. And he's this cool, influential character. And they were building up to that. And I really felt like they were going there. And then he gets to the Overlook and he dies. He doesn't do a goddamn thing. We had to watch him fucking make air. We had to watch him make airplane reservations. We had to watch him reserve a car. We had to watch him drive through the snow. We had to listen to an entire weather report. And I was like, well, this guy's going to fucking do some shit because he's they're beating us in the face with all this shit and his trial to get there. And then he gets there and he dies immediately. It almost felt like I was watching Clue. Like it was the fucking punchline and this was a comedy. Like, sorry, buddy. Like, that's insane. And that caps off how terrible Kubrick was with this movie. He couldn't even give the one guy who really should have been the hero of the book or hero of the story and was the kind of the hero of the book the credit to at least do something. At least punch Jack Torrance. Do something. He did nothing and he died. And it was just such a waste of time and character. And it drove me bananas. The end itself was completely different than the book.
Great.
The very final, you know, I thought it was cool that they ran through the hedge, the maze, and the way the kid figures out to backtrack and Jack freezes. And that scene of him freezing is also obviously iconic. But the best scene in this whole movie, best part of this whole movie, is the very end where you see Jack in the picture. That pays off the whole movie. But the problem is the buildup to that wasn't worth it. Like, I would have rather seen them in the car and then that picture and then just say end. Because everything else between was a fucking disastrous shit show. That said, my very long notes, I will make the point, and I will make this as quickly as possible so Kevin doesn't have to edit more than he's already going to have to. The plot in this movie was, I think, a horrible mess. This story was supposed to be about a guy struggling with demons who starts off and he's kind of winning the battle and he ends up just losing it and this horribly evil place takes advantage of all his demons and turns him into the worst possible him. But at the end in the book, he has a moment where he's able to save the kid. He says to the kid, get out of here. And he's the reason that they actually end up living. And he sacrifices himself. That doesn't happen at all in this. Jack stays crazy, asshole, freezes to death, and then ends up in the picture. There's no redeeming of Jack Torrance in this. So it's basically no payoff. There's really no hero in this book. And Danny's also supposed to be a bit of a hero. And he comes off as just a vacant, just kid on a fucking big wheel. It's terrible. Jack, and as far as the three leads, Jack Nicholson overacted through this entire part. He was crazy from start, crazy in the middle, and then he just gets crazier at the end. There's no evolution. He just is the same thing throughout the whole movie. And everybody says he gave such a great performance. Yeah, he was a crazy guy through the whole movie. Probably anybody could have done that. Shelley Duvall, as I said, went from annoying to a blithering mess. And Danny Torrance was just a bleary-eyed. He looked like he was sedated the whole time. And did nothing to actually serve the purpose of this movie. There were so many opportunities here, and the great comeuppance in all of this is if you see Dr. Sleep, they acknowledge that this movie was so bad that the end of Dr. Sleep is actually the end of the book of The Shining. And it felt, I saw that and I was like, oh, thank God. They fucking finally did it right, and it felt so good. And that movie, while mediocre, the ending was so much better than this whole fucking shit show of Kubrick just jacking off his stylized bullshit all over 2 hours and 20 minutes of this. So yeah, this movie fucking sucks.
Give me a number, 1 to 10.
Two.
Oh. Two!
Wow.
Did I stutter?
Even though you gave it a lot of compliments, not even knowing that you did.
I know, Bill, I always know exactly what I'm saying.
All the stuff that you liked about the movie was not in the book, including the ending as far as the picture, July 4th, 1921 is concerned, and Jack is in there. You loved the maze, but you did. You went back and forth on that. Maze wasn't in the book. What was in the book?
It was Hedro animals.
Animals made out of leaves. Attacking everyone. It was, and the other thing that I have an issue with is you keep talking about Kubrick explaining things. You gotta be goddamn kidding. Stephen King is the world capital of over-explaining. Stephen King is the world capital of backstory. The brilliance of The Shining is that Kubrick got rid of all of that.
I think you're both right on that. I'll tell you why. Look at it. It is a 1,200-page novel that they could have whittled down to
without a doubt. Yes.
The first chapter of the movie was amazing. The second half of it was garbage. But But Kubrick also is Captain Fucking Obvious, as I call it, Sledgehammer to the Balls. These guys both personify the master of the, hey, dumb people, I'm going to make sure I leave no man behind and make sure everyone's in on this next bit or trick or whatever. They are both equally as guilty in my eyes.
Okay, well, explain this to me. If Kubrick is Captain Obvious, did you see Scatman Crothers' death coming? What Kubrick did, which was a bit of a F you to Stephen King, admittedly, is he took a guy that ends up saving everyone in the book, and you have this amazing buildup, and you think that he is going to do A, B, or C, even if you didn't read the book. And the first thing that happens is Jack, and you have to have Jack do this because this makes him really menacing because he's actually got to kill now. Takes an axe, goes right through the heart.
And that's why he did it, because he wanted to have Jack kill somebody. Saw that coming.
Yeah, but no one or the mother saw that coming, and it's a beloved character.
It doesn't make a good storytelling.
It makes a great storytelling because you do not know what's going to happen next. And like, by the way, Stephen King does it badly. Stephen King always kills, like, beloved elderly characters in his books. And he didn't do it in this one, but Kubrick did it better than King ever could.
That's like saying a joke is funny if it's unexpected. And so I whip my dick out, and I'm like, but that was unexpected. Isn't that funny? No.
But this isn't a comedy. This is a horror movie.
Yes, ask Louis C.K. if it's funny.
Horror movies live on the unexpected.
But it wasn't scary. This whole movie wasn't scary. There was nothing
was
scary horrifying. About this movie. The way
I
that he... No. The way he...
Go ahead.
He told you this was a scary movie through the music. If you had put a fucking...
It's great.
A girl running through fields music soundtrack to this, it would have been a completely different movie. The movie wasn't scary. The music was scary.
Wide-angle lens, person right in the center of it, and seeing the horror in their face, and no special effects. Just
who had horror in their face? Jack going like this, or the kid going like this, or Charlie Duvall going like this.
The kid
captured their emotion.
That's so making the cut for our videograms for the week, Kevin.
And also, like, a lot of your arguments were just aesthetics. You didn't like the blood. You thought that, well, he couldn't have said that to the woman in this day and age. They couldn't have said
no. That was just
this
me having
day and
fun.
Age.
There was a lot of other argument there.
Bill,
tell me why this is such a great movie.
Yeah, Bill, let's hear your argument.
Everything. Now. Well, all right. First of all, Kubrick was offered to direct The Exorcist because he always wanted to do a horror movie. And he, for whatever reason, did not take it. And all he did was take what's this convoluted, needed an editor, enormous book that was The Shining with all kinds of bullshit in it. Edited it down to its basis parts, which is a family that's going through some issues and taking them to a possibly, we find out, definitely haunted hotel, and that is it.
That's not what the book is about. That shows you don't even get what the book is about.
That's what Kubrick turned it into.
But the book was about a kid. The book was about a kid with special powers who gets drawn to this fucking hotel that wants to take advantage of him and ends up killing his father and trying to take advantage of the whole family.
Too much. Editor. Simplify.
Yeah, he simplified it into a slasher movie.
I like the idea of Jack Nicholson kind of having The Shining. Too much.
No.
He simplified it down to its base essentials, and it was, as a result, absolutely, unbelievably horrifying.
Then I could have just watched Psycho.
Psycho has obviously changed a lot of things, but let's be honest, Psycho doesn't age well as far as horror is concerned.
Speaking of things that don't age well, The Shining.
The Shining ages wonderfully.
I was
going to
say, Bill Schultz doesn't age well.
I thought that was coming. You,
I don't need to get personal to take this one down.
And also, like, again, your allegiance to Stephen King. Every argument that you kind of had with Kubrick, Stephen King does a million times more. Stephen King spells everything out to you.
Stephen King's a world builder. He builds a world. He's not. He doesn't just tell a story. He builds
a world.
No, it's
editor.
Not. I thought everything.
Editor.
Every little bit he told about Jack Torrance in the book was important and played into why Jack was susceptible to what the Overlook was putting out. everything he went through with the student, with Danny, with his alcoholism.
The student subplot was such a great edit out. No one needed it. It was better to replace the student in the bathtub with, let's face it, some nice tits until she turns into the swamp thing. All of that was not needed. And even then, I think Kubrick understood the attention span of a normal human being, even though it's worse now. But he got rid of all of the fat. And every Stephen King book, aside from his short stories, is a lot of fat. He got rid of all of that and just put it down into a diamond.
I changed
all the stuff that needed to be changed.
I love Stephen King's world building. I love his descriptive ability. I love his knack for putting you in a situation so you can feel that you're there. To me,
let me ask you this. When do you need a world when it's a family in a hotel? You don't need a world for that.
Because this wasn't just a haunted mansion. There was
I disagree with your claim that the casting was bad. I think the casting was perfect. You knew, with very little said about their backstory, what was going on with the family without explaining.
You crucified Kubrick for explaining.
Stephen King overexplains everything.
But you know where I also
know? You didn't have to know that, but you knew it.
You know what?
The acting was so great.
When the handsome jock takes the hot cheerleader out to the lake to fuck, and then they get stabbed by the fucking psycho, I know everything about them too. Doesn't make it a great movie. I know everything I needed about them. Yes, this was a passable slasher movie. This was an okay horror movie.
I would argue that every Stephen King novel is a passable slasher movie.
No.
And did you like the miniseries that Stephen King?
I never saw it.
Consider yourself lucky. It is an abomination. Two words: Maximum Overdrive. That's the only other thing Stephen King's ever directed, and it's a big pile of Jack Torrance diarrhea.
Stephen King cannot be left.
Yeah, he cannot be left to his own devices. Stanley Kubrick was a genius. The way he filmed it was a genius. Stuff that shouldn't have been horrifying. The carpet alone was horrifying. And
orange carpet is horrifying. You shouldn't put it anywhere ever.
The way he did it was, the guy that invented the Steadicam, Kubrick was so enamored with him that he just figured, well, he needed that. So he hired the actual inventor to get what you loved, the big wheel scene. To get, which you claimed you liked, the chases through the maze. All that stuff had never been seen before, thanks to Kubrick. You know what had been seen before? Overwritten, schlocky, cheesy horror that was the book called The Shining.
Wow. I don't think we've ever gotten this kind of bloody battlefield. Wow, we have not seen this kind of back and forth on this podcast ever. And
I feel like you're being sarcastic.
No, I'm not. I'm Tim Messon as well, I might add.
Oh, nicely done.
Wow, SAT word.
You like
that? Wow, well done.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Well, boy, it looks like, Bill, are you done exhausting all barrels of ammunition into this argument?
Here's the thing.
I guess not.
Actually, unfortunately, love Israel, but I question his sanity and I question his taste. He did not win me over.
Wow.
Yeah, he's done. He's done with all barrels. He blew two blanks, and you can go now, Ken.
And I have notes. These notes brought to you by guttingthesacredcow.com. Come on over and get another t-shirt that I'm wearing right now. Guttingthesacredcow.com. Why my co-host doesn't have one on, I don't know. I'll leave it to his own devices to figure out, and maybe his lovely wife can buy him something for.
I thought you were talking about your co-host right now. I'm your co-host.
You're correct.
Yeah, why don't you fucking have a Gutting the Sacred Cow shirt, Bill?
Well, yeah, I'm wearing 42 because a conspiracy theorist thought 42 was a big deal in the movie. You know,
Don't walk on my plug, you asshole.
Sorry, go.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com for all merch needs. Every day we're having blogs Monday through Friday. Give that a look and write us a 2-sentence review, 5-star rating on your podcast platform of choice. Notes: Shelley Winters looks like Marilyn Manson and Olive Oil had a kid. which is hilarious because Shelley Winters played Olive Oil in the Popeye movie.
Right after The Shining. That was her next role.
Minute 18 in, and you can taste the distaste that Nicholson has for Shelley Winters. That's a true sign of a man who's been with the same woman for at least 15 years. He fucking hates her. You could cut that hatred with a steak knife from Del Fresco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why was there a phone booth in the game room? Do you need silence from people throwing darts or playing pinochle for nickels and dimes? Jesus, what kind of privacy do you need for that? Scatman Crothers is that weirdo you never want your kid around. Not because he's a pedophile. It's because you don't want him picking up shitty personality habits. That guy was just so weird and talky. It's like, okay, come on, kid. Let's get out of here. We got somewhere to go.
How dare you?
The head of the hotel looks like William H. Macy with a sweeter leather jacket and a Steve McQueen haircut.
Oh, that outfit he was wearing when he first comes out is amazing.
Isn't it?
Fucking great, yeah. I want that jacket and the Afro artwork. Those two things from the movie.
Danny riding the big wheel, you guys hit right on the head. And how fucking so badass good. Would that be to have an
fucking
empty hotel?
Awesome. Ugh.
And here's my first problem. The maze was not in the opening aerial shot of the hotel when they pull up.
Oh, I didn't know. That's a very good observation.
If you had to watch, and I ask you both, if you both had to watch the hotel from October to May, how long? You guys are worried about all the dynamics of filming and the length of Kubrick versus King. Here's what I was wondering. How long would it take me to jerk off in each of the hotel rooms?
Well, they were there for a while.
2.5 months to hit every room at least once, and the kitchen and other storage closets.
I lost 13 pounds, but I made it.
I'm waiting, exactly. Although they had industrial-sized cans of ketchup, which could immediately rehydrate you. And now I'm waiting for the entire time for Jack Nicholson to go, I never realized I married a toothpike with an overbite and Dumbo ears.
He was miserable, man. It's also just, I think the entire thing is a condemnation of marriage with kids. That's the big FU in The Shining. It's like, ooh, nuclear family sucks.
I don't know about the two of you, but I've never talked to my finger unless there was a booger on the end of it. Whoa, look how big this is. Look at this little one. Nicholson.
I've actually said to my finger, up into the front. Up into the front.
Like you're pulling out a cigarette lighter of an old 85's Cutlass Sierra. That's for my grandfather. I don't know. Oh, I did that one. Nicholson completely threw himself into this role and left nothing in the gladiatorial arena. Overacting or not, that man must have lost 15 pounds of
without a doubt.
Of water weight and exertion by the end of every week of filming. The bathroom scene with the naked woman reminded me of one thing. Pubic hair. Gross.
Lots of it.
Oh,
she was very tall.
And had nice tits. Those are some nice tits. The N-word, quite a shocker. That one, I'm a good thing at predicting the future in these films. Woo, I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
I did not see that coming. And let me ask you guys this. When the N-word comes from someone British, doesn't it sound at its most evil?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, yeah.
It sounds like they're just saying the animal.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That is definitely not the way Mr. Rogers would have said it if he was still alive. I promise you that. Here's something else. You guys are marveling about the Steadicam and the maze and the chasing the maze. You know what I marveled at? All the leg room that Scatman Crothers had while flying coach back to Colorado. Wow! And that wasn't even an exit row. He's stretching out. He's got a cocktail or two. Remember when airlines didn't gouge you and fucking rape you for everything you had?
And in fairness, who was flying from Florida to Colorado at that time of year?
Yeah, right?
Yeah. He could afford the extra leg room because no one else was there, yeah.
If Nicholson is imagining everything, how the fuck does the freezer door open to let him out? Answer that.
He wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't imagining. It all happened.
It was haunted.
That's a conspiracy theory.
Here's another problem with this. The evils of the hotel don't really show their capabilities or explain why you should really be scared. The twins and the blood elevators, that's it? Shelley Winters runs like an infl- right.
Well, yeah, I know. You keep saying Shelley. I think that's the Poseidon Adventure.
God damn it, you're right. I'm a big fan of Cheers. Shelley Duvall runs like an inflatable, wacky, wavy guy you see in the front of a used car dealership.
Yeah.
And here's Kubrick's. Kubrick can be so hit or miss, and here's why he's missed. It doesn't need heavy music cues and extreme zooms to clue in the audience. That is a move to hook dumb people, not a fan.
Hmm.
I felt like the ending was just okay. Had so much Had so much more potential with the maze. Kevin Israel, you're ready for this one? It's fine. It's fine. It is definitely, this is like the third week in a row we have this. This is definitely on the Mount Rushmore of overrated films, right next to Fight Club. Right next to Fight Club. This does not pass the remote test. And I don't care if it's 40. It's 40 years old, fine. But it still is way too dated to keep this in the classic category. I'm sorry. Jaws, 1975, 45 years old, still perfect. Every time there comes on TV, remote test, pass with flying colors. This, nope, not enough sizzle for the steak. I give it 5 out of 10.
Fine. Wow. Fine. You guys, this entire thing was a con job. You drew me in.
I totally sucked
you in. Just to beat the...
I wanted to heel turn you so hard. Look, I'm not as brutal. I knew Israel would be brutal about this. I'm sitting here watching going, that's cool. What the fuck? Who cares? That's kind of cool. Why didn't they expound on that? What is this bullshit? What about her? She's an annoying cunt, as Kevin had said virtually. Is it Nicholson, I don't mind the overacting in this. I don't. You're going to go actually crazy.
Yeah.
But this was such a goldmine of opportunity, and everyone puts us on a fucking pedestal. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it is way too revered. You're telling me that this, and my wife said this, and I vehemently disagree. She says this is one of the scariest movies of all time. I said, get the fuck out of here.
Your wife is a lot smarter.
I will take the original Nightmare on Elm Street as way more scarier
than this film. Absolutely.
This film with
100%.
Are you kidding me? This doesn't give anyone nightmares.
God, what did you walk away face with some knives?
What's that?
A guy that has a hamburger face and has like a fucking glove with some knives on it. And
your concept is amazing. Somebody who haunts your dreams and can kill you in your dreams.
There's no reality based on that.
That's terrifying.
And in real life, everything was
reality based in The Shining,
which was
leaving ghosts. But that was what was so horrifying about it. It was Kubrick is very good about showing comfort, like when Nicholson half the time is like in bed or having toast or doing something like that, showing people in comfort, and then all of a sudden in just a regular family life, and then all of a sudden flipping it where that comfort all of a sudden goes drastically wrong.
But he'll do that, and it'll include somebody going, hey, you know, I think something bad is about to happen. And then the bad thing happens. And it's like, well, that kind of ruined it. The pacing of the movie was painfully slow. And even when the horror moments happened, it never sped up. There was no moment where you felt your heart pounding, where you were scared, where you were concerned. I didn't leave this movie going, huh, that was like a creepy, like I need to think about it. It literally just washed over me like a fucking just wet rain.
Hey, boys and girls, before we get to the critics' 5-star reviews, let's talk about MyBookie. MyBookie, football season's almost here. At MyBookie, winning season means hitting all your parlays and all your props, kicking back, cocktail, chips in hand, watching your team trounce the rivals. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means Survivor, Super Contest, and Squares. Look, invest in your intuition. I do. This is how I pay for Christmas presents and Caribbean vacations, okay? Use the promo code SACREDCOW and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play. That's free money. Come on, get on this. This is designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. From live betting to championship futures, every play you want to make is at MyBookie. It's simple. Make your picks and win free money. Use promo code SACREDCOW and double your first deposit. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie. Critics 5-star reviews. Critics 5-star reviews. Critics 5-star reviews.
critics, 5-star reviews.
It's an interesting movie, but not the ultimate work in a genre that some expected from one of the greatest directors, excuse me.
Oh.
Nicholson gives a performance of his life here, subtly changing from a vaguely defeated family man to a maniacally leering American version of Eisenstein's Ivan the Terrible. Someone was looking to make a deep cut reference, and you win the esoteric award of the week. You beat me for once, because I love those. The Torrance's Night of Anarchy, spearheaded by Nicholson's ferocity, has become one of cinema's most iconic and deranged events. The Shining is a bona fide classic. By this point, almost every scene is so iconic, the experience of watching it, truly watching it, feels something like devouring a greatest hits collection. Barf.
I like it.
Aside from an occasional flash of brilliance, it is tedious and the fatal blow, not all that scary. And that was a 5-star review.
Do they understand how stars work? Yeah. Like they gave the 5 stars. They wrote that. Right. Yeah.
Well, let's get our second favorite section. Oh, I'm sorry. I copied and pasted the wrong section. That was a critic's 1-star review. Whoops. Sorry.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it totally was. I copy and paste under 5-star, and I have it under the first under the 1-star. So that was our first critics 1-star review.
Critics 1-star reviews. Critics 1-star reviews.
Next one. Kubrick takes the trash material of the book so seriously, giving us optical purity framed by Langorious flame. But the material cannot support that kind of handling, and we're denied the few simple pleasures we expect from a scare movie.
Oh. Let me guess, New York Times.
I don't cite sources unless it's Roger Ebert. Stanley Kubrick's efforts to mix fantasy and reality are often resolved, too often, in overused scenes of the persecuted kid, threatened woman, loud effects, and a deluge of blood. The result is an excessively calculated and distant film. Full review in Spanish. Kubrick is after a cool, sunlit version of hell, born in the bosom of the nuclear family, but in his imagery, with its compulsory symmetry and brightness, is too banal to sustain interest, while the incredibly slack narrative line forestalls suspense. And there's our award for saying a lot by not saying much.
Wow.
No kidding. I don't even know what the... Oh,
that guy would do great at a corporate meeting.
That's a PowerPoint meeting right there, yeah.
This guy never misses an episode of the Pun Olympics. Amazon 5-star reviews.
5-star reviews. Amazon 5-star reviews.
I love this movie as much as I remember when I was a young teenager, LOL. My friend and I stalked in her mother's house with the Shining DVD because her mother was so against horror movies. We had to wait for her mother to leave for work at late night, and we watched it in the dark room, and then we fingered each other. No, just kidding. We were...
No, put it back in.
We were so freaked.
Up and forward.
Yeah. That's just like a cigarette lighter. We were so freaked and in terror, even though we recovered in the morning. L-A-M-O-M-L-M-L-A-O. If you love horror movies, take the ride. I wouldn't watch if not for my school assignment. I know some people would have loved it. That's why I gave it 5 stars. I'm not a horror movie person, so I won't penalize it in the reviews because I don't like horror movies.
These 5 stars mean nothing to these people. Do they understand how stars work?
She probably has.
Bill, feel free to go and write your own crappy 5-star review.
Something tells me she has 10 million followers. She probably has 10 million followers on TikTok.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
Overall, I really like this movie. I believe that that has stood the test of time and still presents itself as a suspense-filled movie that Kubrick set out to make. There are fun little nods to this movie in the strangest places, like Toy Story. Yes, I said Toy Story. Don't believe me? Do a Google search and you'll see what I'm talking about. I would definitely recommend this movie.
You just picked that one because it references Toy Story.
You know what? I completely pulled that up. Yeah, well, hold on. Couple more. My daughter has never seen this movie. Now she has. Ah, the Modern of Wonder TV. Oh,
great mom.
She may have slept through some parts. She works a lot and is in school full time. Great movie. Love Stephen King.
Yeah, Stephen King had nothing to do with it. All right, it's a great movie.
And here's where I get and I give credit to a reviewer. Cookie Man 108 writes, by the way, does anyone know where I can get some of those lovely velvety paintings of naked nubile Nubian featured on
That's the best one.
featured on the walls of Scatman Crothers Florida residence. Excuse me. I'm thinking of sprucing up the old homestead, and they're just what I'm looking for. Signed, VP Mike Pence.
No, he wouldn't have wanted the woman.
Well, yeah, I was going to say.
the woman of color. Ready? And of course, our favorite, Amazon one-star reviews.
Amazon one-star reviews.
Horrible. Just another innocence trapped in snow in cottage hotel with a crazy guy with an axe. Just another. This was the first.
I was going to say, yeah, what's the other example?
You simpleton fucking Cro-Magnon asshole is the first one. Oh. I remember it being such a big deal to watch this when I was a kid. My 12-year-old couldn't get through it because of the fact that set and acting quality has gotten so much better in the millennium. Who wrote this? Stella Adler? Methinks the 12-year-old is the actual author of this fucking post. All right, next one. I cannot believe that this movie is as highly regarded as it is. The acting was horrible. Jack Nicholson was himself. Shelley Duvall's character was devoid of any intelligence or depth. The little boy was a half-baked joke. Red rum, red rum, red rum. Who came up with that ridiculous dialogue? From the opening scene, the musical score was simply awful. And to top it all off, it deviated significantly from the source material, including a completely different ending. There are points in the movie that are completely devoid of any kind of meaningful content. The suspense, in quotes, scenes seemingly drag on forever to the point that the only suspense is how soon will this scene be over? That Stephen King considered this movie's hot garbage tells you all you need to know about it.
Listening to that review felt like taking a good shit.
And with one wipe, one ghost wipe, and you're done.
Done out.
Use the pages from The Shining to wipe after you're done.
Next review. I hope that it was not charged for this. I will have to check.
Is that even a review? That just seems like a complaint. Yes.
You were. Yeah. Punchline, you were charged for it.
Yeah, I go very charged.
Next review. Ready? Good. One star, though. It's great. I know this is classic and all, but I hated it, and I could barely sit through to the end. I could forgive all the deviations from the book if the rest weren't so tedious. The loud, shrieking music, I get it. It's like music in every other movie. It's there to help drive the story, and it helps to put you in whatever mood you're supposed to be in while watching the scene. But for me, that got to be too much. I hate the cook was killed off when he was. He was more use than that. Shelley Duvall hated her as Wendy. She was just plain annoying. All that screaming. The Wendy in the book wasn't that terrible. Her main goal was protecting Danny. I did like Jack as Jack. He was good. What do we have here? One more.
I like that guy.
He's on point.
Guy's ignorant.
Jack Nicholson's over-the-top scene chewing. Sorry, Jack Nicholson's over-the-top scene chewing turned out what was supposed to be a horror into an unintentional comedy. Had he toned his performance down a few thousand watts, it could have been a lot better. The best thing about the film is the creepy atmosphere of the isolated hotel. Also, go ahead for one second.
I got to say, like, Jack Nicholson and over-the-top is redundant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Also, I think a movie like this, screaming is for a remake with a better actor in the lead who knows the art of subtlety. That I disagree with vehemently.
Thank you.
Next, two more. Very vulgar. Nudity. Horrible language. Sounds like someone read the reasons why this was rated R or just commented on a conversation between Tom Hanks and his mother. Horrible acting. Racist slurs. Degrading nude shots. Wait, hold on. Bill Schultz is about to orgasm. Don't stop, reviewer.
Wait. I'm almost there. Keep going. Don't worry. It's off camera.
Last one, and always my favorite. What? I didn't order this. Maybe my kid did by accident. Time to put on the parental lock. I think he better check his kid's browsing history, more importantly.
Yeah, no kidding.
I like that he wrote a review for this.
Yeah, yeah. Wait. Horse cock chugging sluts? Oh, wait. That's my wife's browsing history. All right. Now, this is going to feel weird to say it, but Bill Schultz, did Kevin Israel gut the sacred cow?
I love Kevin Israel. Despite
this is unfair.
I love him to death. No, he did not. At all.
Okay. I disagree. I think he went here. See, he has an unfair advantage. He's had 42 plus or whatever episodes to prepare to know how to hit every chord and every angle and come in with a sniper like precision.
I'm a rookie co-host. I'm a rookie co-host.
Listen, he knows
truly Jack Torrance is me. At the end of this movie,
aside
frozen
from all of,
in the maze.
Aside from
Wait,
all of Kevin's,
hold on, I'll give you guys the ISO.
Aside from all of Kevin's kudos, I've been preparing for this one for 7 months.
You did good, Bob. Yeah. You did good. You did good.
I was going to say, this is like the pitcher you hit 650 against, you know? But yeah.
No, but by the way, Israel didn't blindside me. Go team it, because like when we would go back and forth, I guess I never really got your full thoughts on The Shining.
I wasn't
and
gonna
I didn't
volunteer
know,
though.
You thought it was meh.
Well, that's the joy of the podcast, because I'm not gonna. We don't tip our hand. No, we never tip our hands until it's time to go over the notes. But I knew
Lucky.
That was, someone got check raised and got caught with his pants down on the fucking on the got out flopped. But this was like the Priest Valen and Bill the Butcher fight in Gangs of New York. There was blood. You love that. It's a great film. That it was blood and guts and strewn, and there's blood and sweat and tears and missing limbs on the battlefield, and one of you walked away. And you kind of do look like Bill the Butcher, Bill. I will say that. That's ironic.
I bring like that. Bill, I can't wait to hug you.
If Bill the Butcher had AIDS, that's me. Yeah, that's right there.
The product. Everybody owes, everybody pays.
Guys, I got to tell you, man, this was a blast.
Yes.
And I hope you're sitting for this Brainbuster. I don't have a lot that I enjoy or look forward to these days as far as the whole life thing is concerned, but this was a lot of fun.
Oh,
I loved it. Yeah, this
for
is great.
Sure, for sure. Bill Schultz, again, where can we find you? What are you up to?
Oh, thanks so much, buddy. Unfortunately, I have a co-host named Joanne Nosachinsky. We are on a thing called compoundmedia.com. 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. I would promote the slightly better Kevin is positioned tomorrow. But again, this is going to be released way after his next time on. But yeah, it's on Compound Media. You can't afford not to subscribe. It's very cheap.
You see me on once a month in the morning show. I love it. And it's a hootenanny. Kevin Israel, how about yourself? Where can we find you? And congratulations on your first gutting.
Well done, Kev. Yeah, thank that
you.
Was good.
Thank you. KevinIsrael.com. The Struggle Is Real is my album that you can get everywhere. And just keep supporting live comedy where you can see it. A lot of outdoor stuff happening. So hopefully we'll be coming at you soon.
And you, of course, need to go out and check out Gutting the Sacred Cow, where you can get yourself a fancy schmancy t-shirt, much like I'm wearing, and Kevin is going to order tonight.
Oh, my God. I'm getting one of these fucking shirts. Just leave me alone.
You're not going to fit into it. It looks like you're doing steroids.
Don't worry.
I'm your personal trainer.
Don't worry. We have tank tops, too, so don't worry about that. And guttingthesacredcow.com every day has blogs and all that good stuff. And if you have not yet done so, for the love of fucking Christ, write us a 5-star rating, a 2-sentence review. Bill Schultz, it is always a pleasure to enjoy you on our show.
I love you, Billy.
I love you more, brother.
You are a gentleman.
Even though you're wrong.
You are a gentleman and a community college scholar, which I love. And I'll see you tomorrow. But listen, Gutting the Sacred Cow, we love you more importantly, fans. Thanks again for all your love, your tweets, your accolades, your sharing, and all that good stuff. We can't do it out without you. And lastly, if you're looking to advertise, guttingthesacredcow@gmail.com, hit us up. There you have it. Kevin Goatee and Bill Schultz saying goodbye to Kevin Israel.
I'm a ghost.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.